Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
I'm going to make 5 points. But let's keep in mind the question Aisha Hauser asks, that if talking about something like white supremacy can pull us apart, what is it really that holds us together? Because I think there's something that is, and that's why we keep doing this work. But we still have to do the hard work when difficulties face us. So first I want to say something about the events leading to the call for these teach-ins, which are, as I said, are happening over a couple of weeks in 684 UU settings, mostly congregations, but also UUA headquarters for the staff. As the uproar of the appointment of a senior staff at the Unitarian Universalist Association has made clear, and that was what set this off, we have work to do on ourselves as a liberal religious movement, as an association of freely gathered religious communities that would be free spaces in a repressive world, and as builders of the beloved community. What happened was this. There was an opening for one of the 5 regional lead positions. The U.S. UU congregations are sorted out into 5 regions. We are in the Central East region. The 2 finalists for the opening in the Southeast region were a woman of color who was a DRE, a church administrator, and a member of the association's board of trustees, and a white male who was a minister of a congregation and a member of the association's board of trustees. While she was at the recent Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism gathering in New Orleans, the woman was told via telephone call that she was not the one chosen to be hired for the position. The reason given had to do with fit. And fit, as you probably know, is often a generalized way of telling a woman or a person of color that he or she is not wanted, but it doesn't seem that a concrete reason is available. The region to which they applied for the job has no people of color or indigenous people on staff. And it may be the only one that does not of the 5 regions. Another DRE, among others, criticized the hiring decision and called it out as white supremacy. Quickly, 5 ministers of color sent a joint letter to the UUA board, joining the critique, and a number of white ministers together signed a letter of support for the critique, and I was one of them. The president of the association, Peter Morales, responded with a letter that accused the people raising the issue of self-righteous hysteria. He also said that DREs didn't have the administrative experience that ministers have and therefore weren't qualified to be regional lead people. Somehow the Board of Trustees search committee seemed to think that a DRE was a plausible candidate. And of course, Peter Morales' response only inflamed people more. A white female minister about my age said of the president's language, "That's how they talked to me when I was one of the few women ministers in this denomination when I was young." A day later, Peter Morales resigned as president of the association effective immediately. Within a few days, the vice president and chief operating officer, Harlan Limpert, resigned, as did the director of congregational services, Scott Taylor, who was the one who approved the recent hire. Both Limpert and Taylor are white male ministers. Now, it's interesting to note that Aisha Hauser, a former member of the society, is one of the leaders in raising the issue. It's also interesting that a former minister of the society, Sarah Lammert, was the last senior executive left standing at the UUA, and thus was appointed acting chief operating officer to fill on an interim basis her position as director of ministry. She appointed an African-American woman and religious educator, the Reverend Sarah Jessica York, to be interim director of ministry. Meanwhile, not just Aisha Hauser, but Christina Rivera and Kenny Wiley, the latter a DRE well known to many people outside of Colorado where he lives, and a senior editor of the UU World, led the call for the teach-in on white supremacy. All three and others have, since issuing the call, received both support and harassment that goes way beyond mere pushback. The UUA Board of Trustees, looking at 2 months with no president until the election already scheduled at the General Assembly in June, appointed three interim co-presidents: the Reverend Sophia Betancourt, PhD, professor at the Starr King School for Ministry; the Reverend William Sinkford, senior minister of the First Unitarian Church of Portland, Oregon, and the former president of the UUA; and Leon Spencer, PhD, psychologist, prominent lay leader, and the former member of the UUA Board of Trustees. The three co-presidents are leading a process with the board to review employment processes and how decisions are made for staffing of the association, and to move the association into a healthier future. And as I mentioned, one of the teach-ins scheduled is at UUA headquarters for staff. Now, these events are shaking up the structural racism that inhabits today's Unitarian Universalism, that we inherited from our history as a white Protestant denomination. And it's addressing how that structural racism we inherited leads to white supremacy. That is to say, the near impossibility of people of color to move into high-level staff positions in the association. High-level volunteer positions, yes, but not staff positions. In the hiring that set off the controversy and in the early responses to criticism, misogyny was also in play. DREs, I will note, are more likely to be female than male, although there are male DREs, and Kenny Wiley is one of them, and there are several in this district as well. But the uproar is not the problem, it is the opportunity, and the teach-in is one tool to make the most of this opportunity. So I second point. What is white supremacy? For many years, I have heard the phrase white supremacy used in two ways. The first and most common and most obvious is to label a dogma that valorizes whiteness as normative. And the political and social superiority of white people is normative. White supremacists hold to white supremacy in this sense as a moral, cultural, and political norm. It is, in fact, conscious racism. The second way to identify is to use white supremacy is to identify the actual culture and power structure with which we live, though sometimes not realizing it. And it was harder for me to hear this meaning when the term was directed at structures of institutions of which I was a part, or those which seemed to me to be benign. And I'll say here that this use goes back in my experience at least 20 to 30 years, if not more. The blow-up at the UUA makes it impossible not to hear it as describing the structures for which it is easier and less painful to use the term structural racism. Recognizing that white supremacy is real does not mean to accept it as good or inevitable. White supremacists believe it is not only good but morally normative, even biblically mandated in some cases. those of us who live in a white supremacist world and benefit from its being so, as those of you who are white here, and I do, face the challenge of challenging white supremacy, especially in the moral, ethical, and spiritual institutions that we treasure and love. We must speak of the white supremacy in which we live and which benefits every one of us who is white. Words are powerful. That is why, although I was at first taken aback at the use of white supremacy for this call, after careful consideration, I decided to go ahead and use that term. Now, I have been talking about structural racism for a long time. I mean, 20 years ago, I was explaining it to college freshmen taking Sociology 101. And I have come to believe over time that it is not a strong enough term. Furthermore, since it ascribes the origin of the structure, if not its maintenance, to others and to history, it can potentially let me off the hook. Carol Wolfe pointed out to me in an email exchange, a very productive email exchange that we had a few days ago, that words can be dogmatic or dismissed as just words. Reality, however, lies somewhere between those poles. Words as dogma and words as just words. Reality is the arena where meanings of words and their use and their power are contested and reshaped, and that is where we are today in talking about white racism. So my third point has to do with white supremacy in liberal institutions. Today's liberal institutions developed within a culture of white supremacy. Some were begun to challenge that supremacy. Consider the NAACP, founded just over a century ago. Others grew to reject the ideology that came with their origins. Consider Unitarian and Universalist institutions. But make no mistake, our liberal religious congregations carry within them many characteristics of white supremacy, because these have benefited the founders of the institutions and continue at times to benefit the many current members of congregations and current ministers who are white. American Unitarianism and Universalism developed within white Anglo-Saxon Protestant New English culture. And that is very strong culture. And so did the United Church of Christ and many others, but we have to talk about ourselves today. The American Unitarian Association, up to the 1961 merger with the Universalist Church of America, was the old boys' network at the most, at the ultimate form. The old white boys' network, personified. I have spent way too much time reading archives not to know this as a fact. In fact, for many years, the president of the American Unitarian Association actually decided which ministers got to be recommended to which congregations. It wasn't even a committee. It wasn't even a staff person. It was the president. And he wrote a letter to one congregation in the mid-1950s with a list of ministers, one of whom was African American. And he wrote that it might be difficult for your people to accept a black, or, well, Negro was the term he used, a Negro minister. It might perhaps be difficult. He was writing this to one of the congregations in the 1950s that had a significant number of black members. That's how tight the old boys' network was, and the insulation of living within that mindset. An even more painful example, William Howard Taft, a Unitarian, and for many years Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, presided over two unanimous Supreme Court decisions that drew boundaries around whiteness and therefore around citizenship as it was understood in the 1920s. In 1922, In a 1922 case, Takao Ozawa, Japanese by birth, was refused citizenship. The court decided that as an Asian, he was not Caucasian and therefore not white and thus ineligible for citizenship. A year later, in 1923, a case brought by Bhagat Singh Thind, an immigrant from India. He was denied citizenship because Asian Indians, although Caucasian, were not white as commonly understood. That was a consciousness, and this is a liberal, one of us, as Chief Justice of the Court. These were unanimous decisions. So the culture is strong, even if we've worked hard on it. The culture is strong. In their book, Dismantling Racism, a Workbook for Social Change, groups Kenneth Jones and Tima Okun list 13 characteristics of white supremacy culture with detailed descriptions, which I will not go into now, but in the small group discussions that will convene 15 minutes after the end of the service, some of these will be up for discussion. But they are perfectionism, sense of urgency, defensiveness, quantity over quality, worship of the written word, paternalism, either-or thinking, power hoarding, fear of open conflict, individualism, the idea that progress is bigger, it means more, objectivity, and the right to comfort, comfort being a noun, that is the right to be comfortable. 13 characteristics. Now, some of these are positive in themselves, and some are positive in certain situations. Some of them are values we treasure as Unitarian Universalists. The culture that is built on a normative combination of these characteristics, however, is one that tends to be homogeneous and have little room for people of backgrounds that are atypical to that homogeneity, and even if welcomed into the organization, it is difficult for the atypical member to attain authority or power. And here is an example from the recent history. We liberals value individual rights and individualism as a style. We assert our individuality. We correctly note that individualists are often great artists and leaders. The downside of individualism is that it strains communal connections and can make collaboration amongst people who are different from each other difficult to initiate, let alone carry out. Connect this with objectivity, which is not really neutral, is a function of the society in which it's used, is defined by cultural context. Connect that with objectivity, and you get the white supremacist hiring outcome that the UUA experienced in March. Of the characteristics listed, Jones and Okun write, and I quote, "They are damaging because they promote white supremacy thinking. They are damaging to both people of color and to white people," end of quote. Fourth, the challenge for UU people of color and indigenous people. Now, I am in awe of the people of color and indigenous people who have stuck with Unitarian Universalism and in some cases risen above all odds to positions of leadership. One of the people I've heard use the phrase white supremacy over the years is a UU who is Native American by background and grew up UU. And he is a very effective, if cantankerous, minister. But he has the right to be cantankerous. I stand in awe of people such as him and others. And this, think back to the reading from Takiya Nur Amin. She said in part, "One reason I am a Unitarian Universalist is because it is a faith where I can bring all of the best of what I was taught growing up in my multi-faith family. And because, as a religion grounded in principle and reflection, justice making and righteous action are essential to our faith, not something ancillary." And later she says, I have never been able to take for granted that I would be welcome in UU spaces as a black woman. I've never been able to take for granted the sense of home and welcome and connection that I see my white UU siblings proudly proclaim. The UU people of color and indigenous people are challenged to hold on to this faith, and many have and do. What has become apparent over the past 2 months to me is that many UU people of color and indigenous have, in spite of the culture of white supremacy, stuck with this faith, and it really means a great deal to them. It means as much to them as it does to white UUs. My fifth and last point is the challenge to white Unitarian Universalists, or my duty and maybe yours. My duty as a Unitarian Universalist who is a minister is to stand with my colleagues and friends of color and indigenous peoples. My duty is also to keep struggling with the hold that white supremacy still has over me after a half a century of work for economic and racial justice and living most of those years in racially diverse communities and working in racially diverse work settings in many of those years. For if I live in the United States, I live in a culture of white supremacy, which in 2017 is made more blatant by leaders and groups that hold to the ideology of white supremacy, who have become much more prominent and visible since the November election. I believe that everyone here this morning rejects the ideology of white supremacy. But that does not mean that all of us as individuals have rid ourselves of the culture, or that we are not obliged to fight it at every opportunity. So you'll have the opportunity to discuss some of the characteristics of white supremacy culture in the small groups convening 15 minutes after the service. There will also be a small group convening for families of color, multicultural families, to have their own discussions, and that will be a different discussion, because the work of the first set of small groups is work white people need to do. And there will be child care. I will tell you why it is important for you to be in the discussion. As the controversy at the UUA broke out 2 months, I mentioned that a former member of the society, Aisha Hauser, I mentioned today, was playing a leadership role. In the couple of weeks that followed, three members of USR, all white males, in three different settings, told me what was wrong with Aisha. There is also in the wider UU world pushback, not just because it's about white supremacy, but because much of the leadership of Black Lives of Unitarian Universalism and the teaching are directors of religious education rather than ministers, but not all. There are ministers in leadership roles, too. I haven't mentioned Lena Gardner, who's written some marvelous stuff about these issues. But the pushback has been explicit. And this circles back to our history as the Old Boys Network. And the events that set off the current upheaval were the actions of the top leadership still functioning in that Old Boys Network culture. Even as women and people of color were allowed to play supporting roles, and the president at the time was Latino. One last point. There are people in other denominations who, like us, are struggling with this and do not know how these teachings and evaluation of our religious culture will turn out. But more than one has said to me, we couldn't have this conversation in my denomination. I wish the best for you and applaud you for taking it up. So maybe, just maybe, we are beginning to get over one of the characteristics of white supremacy culture, fear of open conflict.